Welcome to Brain Ignition Radio. Here I share with you all of the knowledge and resources I've gained as it relates to nutrition, exercise, and brain health. By sharing these interesting case studies, in-depth discussions, and research, I hope that we can learn together and improve our current health and the health of future generations. I'm your host, Chet Binning, and I thank you for tuning in. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we're going to discuss how to find high-quality supplements. We're going to talk about things like clues to look for if you're looking for a multivitamin or a fish oil. These are things you can look for on any brands. We're going to talk about proprietary blends, artificial flavors. We're going to talk about some other clues when it comes to supplement companies. So what you can look for, again, when they're marketing, how are they marketing? We're going to discuss some supplement theory. So how important are supplements really? Are they actually quote unquote least effective, as we often hear? We're going to talk about the price differences between artificial flavors and natural flavors. We'll talk about some non-medicinal ingredients and much more. So thank you guys for tuning in. The bad news is this week you're stuck listening to me again. No guests this week, but thank you again. Big thank you to our guest last week, Cole Learn, for coming on the show. I've already had some awesome feedback from a lot of people saying they really appreciated that information. Thank you for putting it out there. And I'm like, that's awesome. Don't thank me though. I didn't do anything. I'm just the host. Thank Cole, please, for sharing his story and really getting an important message out there. So yeah, sorry, stuck with me this week. Good news is though, I do have a couple more awesome guests lined up in the coming weeks. One of these is going to focus on a concussion story, some potential long-term side effects and symptoms that we can experience from a concussion, a little bit of the science behind that. So some really cool stuff. We're going to dig into a lot of brain stuff, mental health stuff, and so on. Let's kick things off today with an interesting study. I posted this on the old Twitter earlier today. This is something I'm trying to improve on, is posting some good quality research on Twitter while doing my best not to scroll the Twitter feed, which is a deep, dark hole. If you spend some time on there, you know exactly what I mean. But yeah, so sharing some interesting research, which, you know, most people probably don't care about on like Instagram, for instance, but on Twitter, I think it's a great platform for it. So this study looked at risk factors of depression. Specifically, it looked at hand grip strength. So that's an interesting one, right? How strong is your grip? And they found that there was an increased risk of depression with lower hand grip strength. So increased risk of depression with lower hand grip strength. And this was a meta-analysis. So that means that it was looking at several different studies that have been completed on this specific topic. And then it threw all these papers together into one basket and it applied a statistical analysis to it to determine if this indeed was a trend. So that's just kind of a little tidbit for you there. That's what a meta-analysis is when it throws together many different papers on the same question, and then it analyzes them together. So then it looks at all these, which in this example, it compiled over 30,000 participants. And they said, is there a association here? And they found, yes, indeed there is. So that's interesting, right? You might be wondering, well, how is that possible? That seems ridiculous. And it does, but remember, this is association. This is not causal, but it still tells us some pretty interesting stuff. what it tells us is that muscle is important, and this is also probably a proxy for metabolic health, which we know is really, really important for brain health and mental health. So the key takeaway from this study ultimately was that this is just further evidence that exercise, and here perhaps specifically some form of strength training or maintaining lean muscle, is critical for staving off of things like depression. So some cool research there. We'll kick things off today with a couple questions I received on this topic as it relates to finding high quality supplements. So we'll just kind of fly through these first before we get into some of the other questions we're going to cover today. As Benson strolls into his crate for the episode before we get started. Hopefully he stays there for the next 40 minutes or so, but I don't expect he will. He'll cause a ruckus at some point. So first one, what is your take on fat burners? Right. So as I've said before, I feel that these should be used as a last step. So these should be used at the end of a fat loss regime that uses a caloric deficit and should not be used at the beginning of a fat loss regime. So they should not be used to kickstart things. They should be used to get the last percent gain, if you will, for that fat loss program. So can they be used though, just as like a kind of a quick fix? Let's say someone's going on a trip or whatever, you know, yeah, sure. If that's what you want to do, that's great. I have no problem with that. Just know that there's going to be a little bit of withdrawal isn't the term here. It's not going to be free. So what I mean is you're probably going to put that weight back on very quickly after the trip. So just keep that in mind. If you're okay with that, you know, no issues. So it's more of a tool. Now, the last thing I will say is, as we're talking about supplement marketing today, mostly trying to find high quality things, I think this is something to look out for. So I kind of a pet peeve. One of my pet peeves is when companies market these as like a health product. So is maintaining a healthy weight important for overall health? Yeah, for sure. But is using a fat burner that gets you there very quickly, but has potential side effects when we come off it or when we use it for long periods of time, is that something that promotes optimal health? In my opinion, no. So it's kind of some tricky marketing on these, I think. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. Not that I'm not going to say that they're necessarily kind of like intentionally deceiving. I just think it's, like I said, it's something to look out for because I don't see them as something that necessarily promotes optimal health. I think they can be a tool to maybe get there or support that, but not one of the most important tools in the toolbox, if you will. All right. So next question, what are your recommendations for non-stimulant based fat burner? Yeah, good question. So especially after the first one, when someone asks me about things to increase energy, my first question always, and this should be your first question as well, is how's the sleep? What will improve the sleep? Because obviously if sleep quality sucks, well, that's the source of a lack of energy. And so if you improve sleep, well, then you're going to have incredible amounts of energy. So you want to address the underlying problem. That's the underlying problem with this question, usually is sleep. So what will improve sleep? Well, habits are the biggest thing here. Trying to maintain a consistent sleep-wake cycle as best as possible. So that means getting up at roughly the same time every day, going to bed at roughly the same time, if on weekends you stay up later, you're better off still getting up at the same time, being tired for a little bit, maybe having a little nap, but otherwise staying up and then going back to that same time as you normally would. So this is a better way to maintain that schedule. This sleep-wake schedule, guys, is so incredibly important. It seems so small and meaningless, but it's incredible the amount of things throughout the body, hormones in particular, that are really strongly influenced by our sleep-wake cycle. Avoiding caffeine later in the day, especially if you're someone who is sensitive to that. Similarly, avoiding lots of artificial light exposure later in the day. Another thing that just seems so minor, but has an enormous impact. So the light will act as a stimulant, quite literally, and will disrupt sleep. Avoiding big meals right before bed, that's going to improve sleep. And then kind of just some of the other basic things we've covered, you know, several times now. Temperature is a huge one as well. So you want a very cool sleeping environment. If you're waking up hot, that's something to look into. And then supplemental magnesium is one thing that helps so many people with sleep. Something I've been feeling a lot of lately. I haven't quite figured out why I've felt this more lately than before, but like the restless foot is, and it seems to be more on my left foot, just really weird. Like the best way I can explain it is it's like my left foot has a mouth and I just gave it a cup of coffee. It's so strange and just makes it impossible to fall asleep. So I find myself sometimes getting up after I've been in bed for, you know, I don't know, it seems like 30 minutes, but it's sometimes not. Getting up, taking additional magnesium, and then going back to bed and it feeling good. So anyways, yeah, magnesium, something that just helps so many people with sleep. So that's another thing to look into. And this is one thing that we're going to talk a little bit more about later in this episode. And then last question before we jump into some clues to look for with supplements is, how do you know if you are absorbing your supplement? So this is probably most important for multivitamins, I would say. Maybe not most important, but just most common. This is where it comes up the most, what I hear the most anyways. Is, you know, I'm taking this multivitamin, but it changes the color of my pee. So am I just peeing it out? Is it useless? No, that's not. That's a little bit of a myth. So more often than not, or most common, is when you see that kind of funny color pee from taking your multivitamin, it's likely just from the riboflavin that's in the multivitamin. So this would be B2. And it's just a side effect of consuming it. It's just how your body metabolizes it. It doesn't mean that you're just getting rid of all of it. In fact, I've eaten foods, specifically liver, that are pretty high in riboflavin, and I've seen a similar effect, which is pretty interesting. So it's not just the multivitamin. So yeah, that's not the best indicator. The best indicator, in my opinion, is, do you feel a difference? I tell people this all the time. You should feel a difference from your supplements. The magnesium that we just talked about is a classic example. You will feel a difference from this. And then magnesium is pretty rapid. Not all supplements have such a rapid effect. This is one instance. But overall, you should feel a difference. So if you're using a multivitamin every single day consistently for about 30 days, you should look back over the course of that 30 days and say, like, yeah, you know, like I do feel a lot better for the past 30 days. I just have a little bit more jump, a little bit more zip. And this is obviously very, like, can be difficult to track and identify, but how you feel is important. That's an important indicator. And this is yes, likely the best indicator that there is. Last thing before we get into some things to look for on your labels when you're buying is most supplements are basically just isolated food is really what it is. So imagine all the different nutrients and micronutrients in a piece of food. Imagine you eat that. Let's say, imagine you eat that banana. That banana travels down into your digestive system, gets broken down into all of its individual components. So just imagine that it releases, you know, the potassium gets released, some different vitamins, a little bit of vitamin C. These all get released and then you absorb these. So when you're consuming something like a multivitamin or many other supplements in your digestive system, they're going to look, I mean, almost the same, not identical for sure, but pretty similar. And so the point of this is that your body's pretty good at absorbing most, not all, most supplements. And we're going to really clear this up because, as I said, and as we're going to talk about, there is a lot of crappy supplements out there. But I just highlight this to kind of show you that, you know, absorption of a lot of these, it's going to be okay. But this is a nice little segue now to clues to look for, because while your body's pretty decent at absorbing a lot of this stuff, still the form, the individual form of individual ingredients that you're going to see in supplements really, really matters, because depending on the form, the ability of your body to actually absorb that will differ. So maybe we're contradicting a little bit what I just said, but we're kind of just building on this now, just giving it a little bit more detail. And now we're going to talk about some things that you can actually look for. So I actually recorded this next part one time already, but I mean, even for my standards, it just seemed incredibly boring, and I'm not sure if people would have made it through. And so for this portion now today, I'm gonna really try and bite my tongue and do what I absolutely despise doing. And that is like really just try and give you bullet point answers. So now is a good time to get your pencil out and your feathered notebook and jot down some notes as we go through some things to look for supplements. Now, important disclaimer before we jump in, I do work for a supplement company. That's ATP Labs. This is a Canadian supplement company. But this isn't a sales episode. I'm not here to sell ATP supplements. And frankly, I mean, as I've told people before, I ultimately don't really care what you buy. I mean, yes, I would love it if you bought ATP because I know that it's high quality, awesome stuff, and you will benefit from it. However, my main goal above all else is to help people and help them take control of their health. And so that means that it doesn't matter what supplement brand you get, as long as it's a high quality brand. That's all I care about, guys. Get something high quality. ATP is not the only one. There's other ones out there. And in fact, I'll give you a couple right now that I can think of. Pure Encapsulations is good. Designs for Health is a good brand. And so, yeah, you know, just get high quality. That's why we're here today. ATP is going to be just fine if the 20 people who listen to my podcast don't buy their stuff. Just kidding. There's a few more than 20 people. So thank you for tuning in. All right. So we'll start with, yes, some clues to look for. Let's start with a multivitamin. So you're in the health food store, you're at the supplement store, you're looking at the label on your multivitamin, you're like, what the hell am I looking for here? Like, there's 60 friggin' ingredients. What can I look for? How do I know if it's high quality? All right. So first off, there's a couple ingredients that you can look for. Look at what type of that ingredient is on there, and that's going to give you a pretty good idea of the quality of the rest of the product. So here's what I mean. Look for vitamin B6. Look for P5P. That's pyridoxal 5-phosphate. So this is known to be the most bioavailable form of vitamin B6, this P5P. And so what this tells you is that if they've using this particular option for vitamin B6, well, then that's a pretty good indicator that they've at least, you know, putting the time and the care into that product. They've done their research and they're giving you the most bioactive forms of each ingredient, which is the form that is best absorbed in the body. So this is one to look for. Another one you can look for is B9. Make sure there is no folic acid. This one's pretty well known, I think, but this is a not a good form of B9, this folic acid. And so if you see that, it's a little bit of a red flag, right? Because you know that they're just picking the cheap option. Now, it doesn't definitively tell us if they're doing that for every single option, but most of the time it's going to be pretty conclusive. Like, they're either going to use the cheap stuff or they're going to use the high quality expensive stuff throughout the bottle. So folic acid, you want to avoid that. As an alternative, look for something like methyl tetrahydrofolate as a better option for B9. Now, the other important clue you can look for is check out the minerals on there. So things like magnesium and zinc, So you want to avoid things like magnesium oxide or zinc oxide. Again, this is a cheap option, less bioavailability. So oxides, for instance, are inorganic molecules. And what this means is, so just imagine that the magnesium is combined with this oxide, you take it in, but this oxide is inorganic. And what this means is it's insoluble in water, making it poorly absorbed in your gut. So you want to look for things like glycinate or malate, maybe a little bit of citrate, but as I said, we're going to cover magnesium shortly. Clues for your fish oil. This one is huge. I want to just pause here for a quick second, say some supplements are more important than others to find high quality. I'll tell you right now, something like vitamin D is pretty easy to make. And so, you know, which one you get is not incredibly important. And this is just kind of one of the crazy things about this entire vitamin D story that we've experienced for the past year plus, is that it is so friggin' cheap that everyone could have access to it. And this is something we need to do going forward for optimal health for people. But fish oil, on the other hand, man, this is one that you need to take some care in finding, or else I wouldn't even bother buying it, to be honest. So there's published data that collects hundreds of over-the-counter fish oils throughout North America. What they do in this study is they collect all these and then they run tests on them. They run tests to determine if they're high quality or not. So they're looking for things like heavy metals or oxidation and some other markers. And what they find, I couldn't make up my mind if I want to say found or find, but what they find is this, and there's been several studies of this, but the one I'm thinking of in particular was about 50%, a little bit more even, had high levels, so above the threshold for contamination, which just means that the fish oil is crap. And I'm going to give you a couple self-tests that you can do really without even looking at the label. So for starters, when you open the cap of a fish oil, it actually should not smell disgusting and rancid and fishy. That's a pretty good indicator that that fish oil has been oxidized, and so it's poor quality. You can also bite into a capsule. Similarly, should not taste nasty and fishy. This is another pretty good indicator of oxidation. Now, you can also pop it in the freezer. And whether it's a capsule or a liquid, it shouldn't freeze. If it does freeze, then this tells you that there's not very much omega-3 in that capsule or in that liquid, because the EPA and the DHA, which is the omega-3, which is why you're buying that fish oil, it doesn't freeze. And so if it freezes, it shows you that there's, you know, whatever else in there that is freezing. Okay, now you're buying one and you want to look for some things on the labels. What do you look for? Well, you look for the IFOS certification. This is a little blue label, capital IFOS. This is the International Fish Oil Services. What they do is they're a third party. They have different companies from around the world send them their fish oil to be tested for quality, so contamination and oxidation and so on. They will only slap their label on a product if it meets their testing standards. And so if a bottle has this certification, then you know that not only does that product meet this standard to have low levels of contamination, low levels of oxidation, and be of high quality, but this also tells you that that individual company has actually taken the time. They've spent the extra money, because this costs a lot of money to do. It's a pain to do, but they've gone through that to send their fish oil to these people to have it tested so that they can give you a high quality product. So this is really important. Now, this certification tells you the quality. It does not tell you the purity difference there. It tells you the quality, does not tell you the potency. So the potency, this is the amount of EPA and DHA that is actually in your fish oil. And this is another enormous problem. So most are just way underdosed, just way too low, and you would have to take enormous amounts to get a beneficial amount, assuming that fish oil is actually high quality. So let me just say that again. Even if it is high quality, oftentimes you're going to have to take enormous amounts to get an enormous number of servings to get a meaningful amount of EPA and DHA from that product. So what do you want to look for? Well, you want to look at the EPA and the DHA and add that up to see how much you're getting. Ignore that added amount. Focus on the EPA and the DHA and the DPA if it shows it, but this is incredibly rare. So that's another omega-3 that is pretty interesting. There's not a lot known about it yet. So you want about 3 grams, 2 grams would be the low end, but 3 grams would be ideal, of combined EPA plus DHA. So that's 3 grams or 3,000 milligrams. And you want to see more EPA than DHA, roughly double. So as an example, 2,000 milligrams of EPA with 1,000 milligrams of DHA. That would be potent, and if it has this certification, then you also know that it is pure. Now, last thing with fish oil, I know this is a lot of things, but I want to give you guys the best tips possible. Check out the bottle size. We see this all the time. We see enormous bottles, and they'll say, you know, get this like 6 months supply of fish oil for dirt cheap. That's literally what they say in their flyer. Get it for dirt cheap. No, but you get the point. But the key here, and you know, I get it. This seems awesome, right? On sale. Awesome. I'm going to get more for cheaper. The problem with fish oil, there's a unique problem here. And that is a 6-month supply. Well, you're going to have that for 6 months, which means it's going to have 6 months to oxidize. Because this will happen with all fish oil, guys, regardless of the quality. So even if it has that certification, even if it's high quality, if you have it for too long, it will eventually oxidize. This is inevitable. And so you want to look for something that you're going to finish in one, I would say about 2 months max, ideally, because that doesn't give it time to oxidize, meaning that serving one versus the last serving you have is going to be high quality, equal purity. All right, moving on. Let's cover now magnesium. So we talked about the oxides. So what about citrate? This would be like your magnesium calm, for example. Another cheap form. However, decent absorption, but there is a problem in that you can only take so much magnesium citrate before you get the poopskies. So it will cause diarrhea if you have too much, meaning that it's really only something you can use to kind of top up your levels, I would say. So good to top up, not good for consuming the bulk of your magnesium. Sorry. I had a funny experience with this. Long before I knew anything about any of this stuff, I was taking magnesium citrate. So magnesium calm was my magnesium of choice. And I would take, I think it was like 2 tablespoons or something every night before bed, which I forget what the recommended dose was. It was like 1 teaspoon maybe. But anyways, I knew that to get my magnesium requirements, I had to take about that. So I would take that. I did find it helped my sleep. So that was awesome. That's why I kept taking it. However, I would wake up every single morning with diarrhea. Like not full blown, pardon the pun, but pretty loose poops. Not ideal, not what you want. And I just wondered, like, what is going on here? Like I just, for the life of me, I couldn't think of what it was. Like, is it the coffee that I'm making? Is it, you know, is it the MCT that I'm putting in my coffee, which, you know, definitely that could cause it, but I removed that. Sure enough, I was still getting the loose poops, so on and so forth. Went down the list. And then eventually, finally, I realized, well, hey, citrate pulls water into our digestive system. And if we consume too much of it, well, we just excrete it and it comes out as kind of loose stool. So yeah, this is the problem and why you should only use it as a top up. So then what do you want to look for with your magnesium? Well, you want to look for, there's several different examples. Here's just a few. Magnesium glycinate or magnesium bisglycinate. Those are ultimately the same thing. Magnesium malate, magnesium threonate, and there's a couple others for sure. Now, sorry, magnesium taurate. I mean, there's lots, guys. If you find another one, feel free to send it to me. I can't think of any more right now. But these are all very well absorbed, all very good sources. You can take a lot of it without experiencing side effects. And we're not going to go into what the difference between each of those, but if you want to know, please do just reach out to me because there's some pretty interesting differences there. So that's our magnesium. Now, with other minerals, so things like zinc, you can still apply some of this. So avoid the oxide. Zinc glycinate, for instance, is another good source. You don't want zinc oxide. You might see zinc with methionine. This is another good example. So you can sort of apply this to other options. What about vegan proteins? So this is maybe an overlooked area, I think. People just see that vegan label on something and they think, oh, it's healthy then, it's vegan. Well, No, there's definitely some things that you need to look for. So for vegan protein, but just all supplements in general, let's talk about organic certifications, because this is becoming more and more popular, as it should be, I think, for good reason. But are things actually organic? So what we see now is companies are going to claim, you know, this is organic, this is non-GMO, whatever. And then they don't have the certification. Well, that's bogus. If you don't have that certification, then you can say whatever you want, but it doesn't mean anything. You can't claim your product is organic if you do not have the certification. This is where the certification matters, guys. USDA or Canada Organic, look for those certifications if you want something that's actually organic. Companies can't put that label on there unless they've actually had it tested and had it pass all these tests. These tests that we talk about, so like the organic certification, the IFOS, all these other examples, they are freaking a pain to get. I'm starting to understand this more and more. They're such a pain. I mean, just to use ATP as an example, like oftentimes some products will be out of stock, like for pretty long periods of time. Well, more often than not, it's because we're doing a little bit of a reformulation, or we just ran out of raw material and we're getting more raw material. And it has to go through all of this testing. So we're waiting on results from these tests. And obviously, if you're a manufacturer and you have a product that's out of stock indefinitely, especially if it's a top seller, waiting on this, that's gonna suck. You're missing out on millions and millions of dollars worth of sales. And so most companies will just say, screw it. We don't care. We're gonna just put it out there without it. Whereas other companies, they're going to wait. They're going to pay for it. Again, these aren't free to get. They cost a lot of money. But yeah, this is just some of kind of the back end stuff. So look for the organic stuff. Similarly, if a company or someone selling it is claiming something like non-GMO, again, if it doesn't have that organic certification, then it doesn't mean anything. So back to the vegan protein specifically, check out the leucine content. So look at the amino acid panel on that supplement. Leucine is one of the amino acids. You want to see that like at least over a gram, hopefully around the 2 gram mark, so about 2,000 milligrams per single serving. So that's something key to look for. The biggest knock against plant-based protein, and this goes for food-based or supplement-based, is that it's insufficient leucine. So it doesn't have enough leucine. And this can be a problem for sure. Not getting enough leucine is an issue because it makes it harder to maintain and build lean muscle, which, as we know, I mean, just check out the study we talked about at the beginning, is critical. So you want to look for that number. If it has that, well, then this suggests that they've taken the care to select a complementary blend of different plant proteins. So they've added a couple different ones instead of just like, you know, one or two of the cheapest kinds. They've blended them in a way to actually give you high enough amounts of important amino acids, which are often low in plant-based proteins if we don't really take the caution to prioritize that. So what about some other certifications that you can look for? So again, obviously there's many different ones out there that you might see. We'll just kind of go through a couple of these quickly. So CGMP, at least for Canadian companies, this is an absolute must. If it doesn't have CGMP, I would move on to the next option. This is good manufacturing practices. You know, should have this. If it doesn't have this, it kind of suggests that it's like, it's basically just like, you could call it under the counter. Like, who knows what they're doing? They could be doing anything. And that's probably pretty rare that you find one without that. Now, this isn't the be-all end-all by any means. You need to look for some other ones. So things like NSF, things like informed choice. There's some overlap between NSF and informed sport. So these are third-party companies which test for banned substances in sports. So that's important. Informed choice is kind of the sister company to informed sport. They're also a third party and they're doing testing for banned substances as well, and also doing different quality tests. Now, a pretty unique thing with just a kind of toot the horn of ATP real quick is that they have their entire facility certified by both CGMP and Informed Choice. This is very rare. This is not the norm. There's only, I think, two other companies in the entire country, to my knowledge, that have this. This is an incredibly high standard. This is why we're able to call our supplements pharmaceutical grade, because it actually exceeds the standards of the United States pharmacopoeia. So that makes these pharmaceutical grade because of the amount of testing they go through. So again, just depending on, like, you know, the time and effort you want to put into this, how much you care, I hope you care at least a little bit. These are some things to look into. With that certification, other thing that you should do is just do a quick Google search. Look it up. Is it a legit certification, or is it a certification that your neighbor just made up in their basement and they just designed a logo on the weekend and slapped it on there? So something to look for. Now, quick pause here. I'm sure at this point you're kind of going like, holy tits, like this is just so much to look for. How do I possibly keep track of all of this? Well, you don't have to. You just find a company that follows all of this and then you just stick with that company. That's the easiest way. So what about protein powder now? So here's a little trick. Look at the scoop size first per serving. Now, this isn't always the same, but you'll often see something like 30 grams as an example. So next, look at the amino acid label that shows you the individual breakdown of amino acids. Add all of those up, see what you get. You're going to get, hopefully, something close to 30 grams or something close to that one serving scoop size. What this tells you is that, so let's say you add that up and you get 27 grams. This tells you that 27 of the 30 grams in that scoop are amino acids. In other words, protein. That's awesome. That's what you want, right? You're buying a protein powder, you want protein. You'll then go to, so that's kind of step one. If you want to take this further, go then to the nutrition facts label, add up the fat and the carbohydrates, add that to the protein. This might get you to something like, let's say there's 0.5 grams of carbohydrates, 0.5 grams of fat. This might get you to say 28 grams. And so what this tells you is that 28 grams of that 30 gram scoop, again, this is just an example, is the protein product. If this is a whey, it's the whey protein, because you're going to naturally find some carbohydrate, naturally find some fat. And the most important thing here is that in this example scenario, only about 2 grams per scoop are added flavors. And so here is the important factor here, is that you'll do this to some protein powders. There's many out there. You'll add this up, you'll do these calculations, and you're going to find like 5-10 grams is just filler. It's just crap. And so what that means is you're paying every single time you buy that, you're buying a protein powder and you're paying for fillers. You're paying for flavors and sweeteners, and oftentimes they'll add in sugars. They'll add in, sometimes they'll add in food coloring or food dyes, which is the worst of all. And we're going to cover that at the very end. And you're paying for that. And that's, I don't think that's what you want. So this is a nice little trick that you can use. But again, once you find a good one, probably best just to stick with that one choice that you like. Okay, another important clue. Next up is a really important one. Proprietary blends. Ah, yes. What is a proprietary blend? Well, this is when you look at the label and it will list each individual ingredient, but it won't tell you specifically how much of each ingredient is in there. So let's use an example. I don't know, let's say a pre-workout. Let's say you buy a pre-workout and you look at the label and it says proprietary blend, and then it says 3 grams. And then you look at the individual ingredients and it gives you 5 different items. I don't know, let's say it's like beta-alanine, L-citrulline, creatine, beetroot, and I don't know, glycerol, just as an example. So that means that all of those are in there in mysterious amounts, but whatever the amounts are, they total 3 grams. Now, this one, I will admit, takes a little bit of learning, but you can make this really easy, guys. And I'm going to try and make this just super easy for you. There is no secrets. There is no secrets in what works and what doesn't. Anybody can jump online, jump on PubMed or Examine or whatever, one of these other sites that summarizes research, and learn what works and what doesn't and how much you need of each. And so to hide something on a supplement label, to me, is just so incredible. And maybe this doesn't apply to every single proprietary blend out there, but to me, it just says, it's just a money-saving tactic. I mean, that's more often than not, it's going to be a money-saving tactic. Because why aren't you going to show someone how much of each ingredient you've put in there? You're not hiding some super awesome formulation, because that's known. Any good supplement designer knows the research. They know how much of each individual ingredient is required to obtain a certain goal. I mean, creatine is the classic example. We know that 5 grams of creatine is what is required to deliver the benefits of creatine. And you could go down the list, ingredient to ingredient, look up, this is what's required. And so the point here is that a proprietary blend is usually just a marketing tactic, usually just a way to save money, because they can go, hey, look, we added all these ingredients. Look at all these awesome ingredients we included in our product. And they can then slap it on the label. But when they use a proprietary blend, they don't have to tell you how much they put in of that ingredient. And so they could just simply sprinkle a little bit in there. It could be a meaningless amount, and you're not going to get the benefit of that individual ingredient. Again, I don't know if this is the case for every single proprietary blend on the market. Please, if you've found one that you think maybe doesn't fit this mold, or is maybe a unique exception, I would love for you to send this to me and we could kind of look at this and dig into it and see if actually it could be legit. But from what I've seen and what I've looked at is, it's not a good high quality source. And as I said, if you know the amount, it's pretty easy to do. let's just use this example of creatine. We know that 5 grams is what's required. So if you see a proprietary blend that is 3 grams total, and it has 3 to 4 separate ingredients on there, and one of them is creatine, well, you know, you're sure not getting anywhere close to 5 grams of creatine. And so you're probably not getting enough of the other ingredients either. So as I said, in my opinion, this is mostly just a way to save money because you don't have to add as much, but you're still able to slap all those ingredients on there and say, look, we've included all these awesome ingredients. So yeah, that's all I'll say about the proprietary blends. I mean, it's kind of like, it's like going to a sports store and buying a new hockey stick, and the company says, hey kid, try this new stick. It's new, top of the line, better than all of the other ones out there. We've improved so many different things. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be the best feeling stick yet. And then you go, oh yeah, what's new? What did you change? Well, we can't tell you, but it's awesome. Give it a shot. So, you know, this is how I feel about it. And then to me, this also kind of just completely breaks one of the other rules that I'm going to address next. And that is, when you're finding a good quality supplement, when you're finding a company that you believe in, that has integrity and that you want to buy from, you should at least make some type of assessment about how and why they think their supplement is superior, or why it's good. You know, what makes it different than the other ones? They should be able to explain to you, looking at the ingredients, looking at the label of one of their products, whatever, they should be able to explain to you, you know, we have this ingredient added, this is why this is superior to other options. This is why we've added this amount. We've also added this to the formulation. This is why we did this. It's going to help with, you know, absorption of this and metabolism of this. And when these are combined together, they really do work synergistically, because, you know, this mineral is required to blah, 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 and so on and so forth. You can't do that if you're using proprietary blends. It's impossible. You cannot. And so I think it just totally contradicts one of the things you have to look for, in my opinion. So yeah, so like I said, but please do reach out to me if you have more questions about that, if you've found something that maybe doesn't fit that. But I think those are some good things to look for. In conclusion of today, let's go through some really important stuff. But I mean, something that I would call, I mean, it's the most boring stuff for sure. So that's why I left it to the end, but it is really important stuff. Now, quickly, I know I said I was going to discuss something that I would call supplement theory. I'm going to save that, I think, because I need at least like 10 to 20 minutes to go over that. So I don't want to try and ram it in here and not do it justice. So if you're wondering what this supplement theory is that Chet mentioned at the start of the episode, please just hang tight. We're going to close with some mostly non-medicinal ingredients. Now, firstly, let's cover artificial flavors and sweeteners. Now, I know there's so many debates on this stuff, and we're just going to kind of quickly summarize this in like 30 seconds, under a minute. So preclinical data does show a problem with some artificial flavors and sweeteners. So this means animal models. Usually it's a problem with the gut bacteria. So preclinical data often shows that artificial flavors and sweeteners can impair our gut microbiota. Some human data shows a problem. Some human data shows no problem. So this is why we see this debate. And so, as I said, I mean, we could go back and forth on this. Maybe we're not going to have a conclusion for several years, but my kind of takeaway on this is that most of these studies are short term. They're too short term to see if in the long run, taking artificial flavors every single day is going to cause a problem. I kind of just like to simplify things and say, it's if it's something that our gut has never seen before, which is what most of these are, it's probably not going to be a good thing in the long run. Now, is a little bit here and there going to be an issue? Probably not. I mean, there's definitely like enormous exaggerations out there that we see on social media and on the web, people claiming that these will cause, you know, XYZ illness. Could they perhaps increase risk of some different things if we use them chronically? It's very possible. That's my concern. And so the way I see it is, why even take the chance? Why even take the risk? You're going to definitely get some added flavor if you consume these. For sure, you're probably going to pay a little bit less, but in the long run, my opinion, it's not worth it. So I think this is just something to consider. Now, if you want some reading on the subject, I don't know how many of my listeners, I should find this out, actually like to dig into some of the research papers I mentioned, but I'll just give you one as an example. So this is Ruiz Ojeda. R-U-I-Z hyphen O-J-E-D-A, and then Francisco Javier et al. So that's Francisco J-A-V-I-E-R. This was Effects of Sweeteners on the Gut Microbiome, a review of experimental studies and clinical trials. This was published in Advances in Nutrition. I don't have the date here, but I'll post in the show notes. So that'd be a good one to check out. A review is always a nice place to start with this stuff. Now, price comparison of this stuff is fascinating. If you look at the price of artificial flavors versus something like organic non-GMO stevia, it's enormous. So here we go. Price per kilogram of ACE-K, which is a common artificial flavor, $4.80. Aspartame, which in my opinion is maybe one of the more concerning ones. There is some research showing how it might affect our neurology, specifically dopamine signaling, how it could be linked with ADHD. One of the most interesting things with this stuff is it's not published, but when you hear from people who say that they're addicted to some of these or say that they have been consuming them like regularly and then try and stop and they get severe withdrawal, I mean, there's things like this out there, which again, not published yet. And so it's more so just hearsay, but it just makes you wonder. Aspartame, $6.20. Sucralose, $18.90 per kilogram. Organic non-GMO stevia, $200 per kilogram. And so if a company is using these natural flavors or sweeteners, at least just be aware that they are paying a ton of extra money to use this instead of an artificial flavor or sweetener. What about non-medicinal ingredients? Lots of these. So let's just go through some things to look for. Let's start with coloring agents. Guys, if you see something like a red number 40 or like a food dye or a food coloring in a supplement, like just move on to the next one, please. Same thing with food. If you see this on a food label, get something else. I mean, this is one of the worst things we're going to find in food. I cannot believe that these are still allowed to be put into foods and supplements. So look for these. Natural flavors. This is a very kind of unregulated area at the moment. It's really hard to find more information about this, to be honest. This is something I've been working on lately. So as I said, it just seems unregulated. As in companies are able to put natural flavors on there, but in terms of what actually is being used to be called a natural flavor seems very, very loose. And so this is just something to monitor. I can't really give you a conclusion on this right now. But that being said, if you see one that has natural flavor versus doesn't, something to consider. What about synthetic emulsifiers? So these are things like polyscorbate 80, Corrigan, CMC. These are often used to add texture. this is something to avoid. Try and avoid these. Excuse me. Some of these have been linked with gut barrier dysfunction or gut mucosal impairments. So really important things. Whenever you see something harming the gut, this is always a red flag. So this is something to look for in this non-medicinal ingredients. And then what else did we have on here? Perhaps this was all I had. So I guess this is all I had for now. Sorry for the anticlimactic ending. I didn't want to bore you guys too much with these non-medicinal ingredients. Please, though, this too, if you have any questions about these, feel free to reach out to me. I know there's probably some other ones that we didn't touch on. I'll actually add these into either some show notes or maybe an introduction in an upcoming podcast, because I think this would be important to have a list of. These are important things to look for. We'll talk about the supplement theory. That's another important one. But otherwise, that's it for today. If you guys made it this far, thank you very much. I hope you got a lot of value out of that. I hope you have a nice long list of things now in your Feather notebook to look for when you're finding a supplement. Just be a little critical, I think. This is one of those things where if you put a little bit of time into it at the start, I think it's going to just make things significantly easier for the next several decades for you, because you're just going to find a good choice and then you can just stick with it. So that's it for today, guys. Have a great week.